to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Lou Michaels from Colorado. And no, he's not sitting there naked looking up at dead animals' heads like, you know, like if he went to Yale or someplace.
It's too cold here to do that.
You guys still cold?
Yeah.
No, what are you going to do about that? Nothing. We're nothing, cold here.
No, it's too cold to sit around without any clothes on early in the morning. I'm in my boxers.
Could be worse. You could be like in Iowa, you know, getting flooded.
Nebraska.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's we had a blizzard. This is sort of classic Colorado weather. We had a blizzard here a week ago, and when I say blizzard, I mean you know, 80 mile an hour winds and the whole bit. You know, the snow's almost all gone now, and it's gorgeous, typical gorgeous spring weather. People are up spring skiing. Huge snowpack up in the mountains. They're expecting another foot of snow this weekend. And right now there's a lot of water up there, which is really good for the upcoming fire season.
I was looking at the snowpack things that I look at. I don't know why I should be, but you guys were a little behind average. Then you caught up to average pretty fast, and in the last 5 weeks, you guys have left the average in the turf.
In the higher mountains, that's right. Denver is still about half a foot behind its normal snowfall. But ironically, March and April are the two heaviest snow months for the mountains here. So could still catch up. But it's one of these things. I mean, the change in the weather here because of the mountain climate is dramatic. You know, with traveling. You know, 25 or 30 miles, you know, 25 or 30 miles south of Denver is something called the Palmer Divide. And it's basically just a ridge that runs, sort of east-west out of, off the Front Range here. But, you know, it's not very high. I mean, it's maybe a couple hundred feet high. But that altitude change, is enough to block clouds so that you'll get or block moisture so that you'll get a lot of snow 20 to 30 miles south of here where it's a regular weather event. It will fall there and basically stop it from getting to Denver. So, you know, and then obviously, you know, you go 20 miles west of Denver and you're into the mountains and all bets are off with respect to what happens there. It's something when you look at the radar, you'll see, you know, heavy blue or heavy green, you know, 10 miles away, and it stays there. You know, it will not come over the city. So it's a very different kind of weather pattern than what you see coming off the lake. Kind of comparable to those lake moisture zones that you'll get with snow belt or rain coming off lake effect.
Or by South Bend or New Buffalo, those areas.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, very narrow bands of weather, and that's off the lake sometimes, and that's very much what you see here on a regular basis.
I feel like we haven't had much snow here.
We've had boatloads of rain.
We've had lots of rain, and we've had lots of cold. Thank God,
not together.
Which is weird. Yeah, they just haven't come at the same time. I mean, we haven't had an inch of snow here in I would say almost 2 months, and yet Nebraska and Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin have gotten hammered.
They had huge. Yeah. We've had huge rain here the last few weeks. We've got almost record. Look at some of these Illinois rivers. We're talking about record floods.
Yeah, it's just whenever the precipitation has come, it's been warm.
That one weekend, it rained what 40 straight hours.
yeah. It's pretty apparent that the climate's changing. You know, for better or worse around Chicago. There's a lot more moisture coming in there.
Well, I mean, you look at some of these, there's a thing here. You can go to all you have to do, by the way, if you want, if you have any kind of curiosity in these things, which maybe you don't, but just go to just name your place, put like Chicago area river levels, and this thing will pop up. That is the Advanced Hydrologic Prediction Service. And it'll show you all the buoys and all the streams and all the rivers around your place. In some of these places, even in Illinois, this river that goes through Freeport, the Pescatoya River, whatever the hell it is, it's 2 feet over record stage. I mean, we're talking about, you know, records that go back 100 years, and, you know, we're 2-3 feet over them in some of these areas. It's not even close.
I'm really hoping at some point that some enterprising citizen or enterprising business decides that it would make sense to, much like an oil pipeline, put a water pipeline in from the Midwest to the West. And
we would do that why?
Water.
We would do that why?
Because the West is badly in need of water, and always will be, apparently, for a while. I'll say always. For a while, will be, for the next 100 years.
Are you Rick in Casablanca? I came here for the waters. It's a desert. I was
misinformed. Something like that. Yeah. I mean, it just, I don't know if that's even economical, but it would make a lot of sense to be able to divert some of this rain.
I'm going to say it would make zero sense for us to give you our water.
I agree, because you've got a huge reservoir right there.
Yes. And why would we give this to you? Why?
Because the West would probably buy it.
Because the minute somebody was dumb enough to give you a straw, you'd want a pipe, and then you'd want a tunnel, and then you'd want God knows what else.
Chief, I'm representing clients who are going into abandoned mines up in the mountains here and draining the water out of those things that they fill up every spring. Draining the water out of those things and pumping it into metropolitan Denver to support water. If you're willing to go through that kind of an extraction process, there's a market for fresh water here.
Well, I mean, we could have you on someday, because I think the subject is fascinating. Whether anybody else would, it's another story. The fight between who gets the water in the West is something absolutely fascinating for some of the
West. No, I mean, we've talked about this, but I want to move to that the latest 737 stuff, because there's some new information that came out yesterday afternoon. But
were you the pilot? Were you the pilot in the jump seat that saved the one the day before?
No, but that's part of the information. The other information that popped out was the leak of some of the cockpit voice recorder.
I didn't hear that. What did it say?
Both of those stories put credence to the fact that this is a matter of pilot training and maintenance, you know, more than it is anything else. I don't understand how you get to this point, but they had one pilot on the aircraft the day before who was, you know, knew what he was doing and recognized a runaway trim situation. And simply turned the trim stabilizer stuff off. Every U.S. pilot that I've talked to, and I've talked to probably 10 since we were on the air last week, every one of these guys says the same thing. They're all trained to recognize runaway trim, which is what the MCAS system looks like when it's operating. They're all trained to recognize runaway trim. There are some major indicators of a runaway trim situation, not the least of which are two large wheels that sit on either side of the flight console that move when the trim is activated. You can see them move. It's very apparent when they're moving. And it's a very straightforward fix to eliminate the problem. And look, Indonesian Lion Air had a pilot on the day before flying in the aircraft, who recognized the situation and shut the system off. For whatever reason, this did not make it to the rest of the Lion Air pilot community, and they had two relatively untrained pilots in the seat. They flew the aircraft for almost 15 minutes, fighting this condition without understanding what they were dealing with. And it's inexcusable.
There I was last night.
But it's not a Boeing problem.
There I was last night minding my own business in the Club Lago bar, meeting some people, business, strictly business.
What is the Club Lago?
It's a restaurant in Chicago. Nice place. Been there forever. Italian place.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm sitting next to this guy.
It sounds like something out of a Leonard Elmore novel.
Well, it turns out the guy I was talking to, I accused him of being you. Big.
Them's fighting words.
Big.
For anybody.
Somewhat heavy set Jewish guy who's an architect. And he builds schools. He's a very interesting guy, very nice guy. And he's a pilot. And he sounds just like you. And the interesting part is, I finally got him to admit by telling him exactly what you said, that both of you are coming at this absolutely wrong. But he was at least nice enough at the end to say, you know, you're right. Your buddy and I are wrong. We're just looking at it the wrong way. And, but you will never concede. There's a difference. Just saying.
Well, I'm not, I don't know what the argument is.
The argument is his point was
Boeing is working in a fix, but the ultimate cause of this accident is lousy pilot training.
And
poor maintenance.
He is a pilot, and it was almost word for word. People here in the U.S., the pilots came from the military. They learn from visual. They have a seat of the pants view of the thing. Blah, blah, blah. When they sense something wrong, they're much more likely to figure out what the fix is or override or just go back to manual stuff. Word for word, Lou Michaels.
Those are all accurate statements.
Sure they are. But they're on the wrong level of the chessboard. Is my point. I said, but yeah, but so what? I said, you have somebody that has marketed this plane where 50% of the sales are going to be to overseas. You don't have American Vietnam pilots sitting in the chair, for God's sake. Your entire message to these people is this plane is the same as the other plane. Just grab some guys from a 400, drop them in here, and they got no problem. You know, there were some American Airlines pilots that I read the other day didn't even know the system existed.
Oh no, that's actually correct, and that's a mistake by Boeing. But that's not what caused the accident.
I get that part. That people should have been able to override a friggin' brand new airplane. It's got something wrong. I'm with you 100%. Well, I'm just saying,
Chief. Here's the perspective that you're coming at it from, and here's the perspective that I'm coming at it from. You're coming at it from the perspective of a relatively unsophisticated consumer of air services. I'm coming at it from the perspective of somebody who had. You know, lives in this community and talks to the people in this community all the time. No properly trained pilot, and I'm going to say this unequivocally based on what I've read and talked to folks about so far, no properly trained pilot would have failed to recognize what was happening in that cockpit.
Okay, and what my
point is... I'm
talking
about Lion Air. We don't know what happened.
I know, but my point is the two guys from American that I was reading last week that were... It said it happened to them, and they did exactly what you said. But the weird part is, they still had no idea why. They said after they landed, the co-pilot and I spent an hour in the cockpit going over all the checklists and everything. We were convinced we must have done something wrong or missed something. I don't think he didn't say it, but it sounded like he never even reported it because he thought it was their screw up.
Here's what I'm going to tell you that I understand. What you've described is exactly correct, and that's on Boeing, because they did not initially publicize the fact that this system was in place, and that's a mistake. But that's not what caused it. In an aircraft, when you're flying, there are certain basic things that you are expected to be able to do, and one of the things that you're told over and over and over again is, you don't necessarily rely on, you know, the aircraft. When the aircraft is doing something that's odd, you revert back to basic instrumentation and basic flight skills. And one of the things that, as I said, every competent airline pilot is trained to recognize, every big jet flyer is trained to recognize, is a runaway trim situation. Because it happens. Things break on airplanes. You're expected to be able to deal with that kind of a situation. And the U.S. pilots up to now have dealt with it. They have reported it in some cases, and in some cases they didn't know what to report. And again, that's on Boeing. Boeing should have publicized that. But by the time the Lion Air crash occurred, it was known in the community that there was an issue with bad angle of attack readings that would cause this thing to kick. And the idea that you would fight your airplane for 15 minutes before it takes you down is just crazy.
Well, he was with you on all this stuff. I mean, the difference is he would concede. You don't.
Concede what?
That I'm right.
That you're right about what?
No, just about everything on this one. But you know what's interesting? He did say some stuff that I bet you would agree with. He goes, despite the fact that these guys want you to flip it on autopilot, basically the second you leave the ground to save a teaspoon of gasoline, he goes, virtually all ex-military and all visual guys will not let go of the control of the airport to the aircraft to the autopilot, U.S. pilots, until after they're supposed to. He goes, really, foreign guys will do just what they're told.
I think that's absolutely correct. Everyone, at least with regard to the guys I run around with, every one of my friends, every one of my classmates from Air Force who fly these things, talk about the fact that, yeah, we let the autopilot do its thing, but we like to fly during critical phases of flight, and critical phase of flight is takeoff,
right,
obviously, and landing.
He says, I'll bet you that nobody wants to mess with them because they're really good pilots, plus they're, you know, a bunch of military guys, and you respect them for that. He says, nobody's going to fire one of our guys for flying the thing to 15,000 feet when we would like to have them fuel-wise turn it on at 5. He says, our guys, there's guys that will never let it go before a certain level. They don't care what you tell them.
And I think most U.S. pilots, I think that's correct. And I will say that part of the reason for that is because everybody knows that machines can break and things can go wrong. And if something's going to go wrong, you want your hand on the stick when it happens. You don't want to have some kind of machine logic taking over that you're going to be behind the curve on, because you're not instantly understanding what the machine is doing. This is the Sullenberger model in terms of recovering.
Well, they're still saying that guy did everything wrong, right?
Well, he was second guessed
for a long time. Oh, God, yeah.
I'm sorry.
For a long time, if he'd have died, he'd have been pilot error.
Well, they would have. I'm not sure it would have been pilot error. They would have probably said something to the effect of he had a Hobson's choice. He could put it in the river, or he could try to make Teterboro, but the window to make Teterboro was very, very small. My take on Sullenberger was, you know, that was a guy who instantly, once he got control of the aircraft, instantly, you know, maintained stick and didn't rely on the machine to run everything. I will say this, and maybe some of my airline pilot friends can correct me on this, but my understanding, again, based on conversations within the community, is that the way Boeing is designed versus Airbus's are designed is that in the Airbus AI in the Airbus made the decision to shut the engines down once it detected, you know, terrible damage as a result of the birds going into the intakes. A Boeing product, not quite so fast on that. Would have given the pilot the option to keep the engines going as long as possible, get a little more altitude, a little more control. The Airbus's first move was to save the airplane.
Well, one thing, this dude's conclusion last night, and I'll see if you agree with this. He said that the leap between, because from everything he's read, the leap between the old 737 models and the new one, even though it was marketed as being pretty much the same damn plane, which it's not, he said it definitely called for a few hours in the simulator between A and B. He goes, not probably a hell of a lot, but some simulator for all the new systems on there. Some simulator time, and he goes, nobody does that anymore. And then he goes, the plane came out before the simulator for the plane. He said that's unconscionable.
I don't know about unconscionable. At some point we may get to a situation where the MCAS or that modification is in fact the reason the plane crashed. A plane crashes. I agree with him to the extent that Boeing should have told everybody, look, there's a modification on this airframe, and you'll see it pitch in. I will. Do you know why they didn't advise the pilot community immediately of this system? Because they were afraid that somebody was going to get a bad reading on it and would fight the aircraft, and they would end up with an Air France situation, Airbus that went in the Central Atlantic about 10 years ago. They were afraid that they would end up with pilots fighting the aircraft rather than letting the airplane do what it was supposed to do, which is pitch the nose forward to prevent a stall. And so they didn't think it was necessary to advise.
Well, that's
that
what happened.
A mistake.
That's what happened to the prop job in New York, because the guy was trying to get a date from the co-pilot.
Well, no, the Air France guy was not trying to get a date from his co-pilot. What he was doing was they had bad, much like the Boeing issue, they had a bad angle of attack reading, a bad airspeed reading that was coming in because
this is the one over the middle of the ocean from Brazil.
Yeah, and. And again, this comes down to pilot error. It was pilot training. This guy knew, had been trained on how to respond to this kind of a situation, and just blew it off, and crashed the jet. That's what happened.
The people that I had one of the most fascinating conversations, Lou, with somebody. I just bump into people, and be honest, the only thing that would have made it better is if you'd have been with me. Because I was in Philadelphia seeing some clients and what else. But I went over to see the battleship New Jersey as well, which is pretty friggin' neat. Anybody who does that is out there should
do that. That's a great. Any of those old battleship tours, same with the USS North Carolina down in Beaufort or Buford or whatever it is. Those are fantastic tours.
And so I'm sitting. I get back. There's a little, there's a little bar in a place. I was in one of those. Little hotel downtown. So this guy comes in next to me. He seemed like kind of a weird duck. He was worried about where he's going to park his motorcycle and blah blah blah. And I'm going, again, I'm going to sit next to this guy. Well, it turns out the dude was the FAA's leading inspector or investigator of air crashes. And you can only imagine, with my mind loving all this stuff, I was there for 2 hours. The guy, and finally, he went off to dinner somewhere. I would have sat there. I'd still be sitting there with him. I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. He was saying that the DC-10 that went down here with the engine flew off it, he goes, that was savable. He said the guy, instead of taking a breath and saying, okay, what do we got? He said the guy pulled back on the power. He said he instinctively pulled back on the power when the engine flew. He goes, if he'd have pulled forward, he'd have got that thing down.
Yeah. It's and again, what are you trained for? How do you train, and then how do you react?
He said the guys in Omaha, that one was the. He goes, when we teach school, he goes the one how not to react was the one at O'Hare. Just do it yourself without taking a second and asking people. I mean, remember in the Enterprise, they asked the kid what would Jean-Luc Picard do? He said immediately ask for people's opinions and make the decision. He goes, but this guy didn't ask anybody. He just pulled it back and he had time. Where the guy in Omaha, where he landed and almost pulled it off, where some people died and some didn't.
Sioux City, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, that guy did everything right. Talked to everybody. They were all on board. They all knew what he was doing. It was a team effort, and he goes, they damn near pulled it off and saved, half the people or more.
I will tell you, when I was flying for the Air Force, the first thing one of my flight instructors, my training guy, said, when you have an airborne emergency, there are boldface steps that you take to respond, but before you start the boldface, and boldface means it's memorized. You typically don't memorize checklists because you don't want to skip a step because of a bad memory. But the boldface stuff you do memorize because it has to be done quickly. He said, but before you initiate the boldface, those boldface steps in the checklist to recover or whatever, light a cigarette. Now, this was in the 70s when people could still smoke in cockpits. He said, light a cigarette. Which is a metaphor for assess what's going on before you start taking irrevocable steps or steps that will become irrevocable because you did the wrong thing. And that's a model for decision making for flying. I'm fascinated to see.
Well, hold that thought, Lou. We got to go to break. We also got to tell people if spools are now down 9.25 for some reason. Dow's are down. Dow's down 99. We all of a sudden have a head south here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jack, tell you about it when we come back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Ollie, Mr. Lou Michael, and this is Mayor Weber on the board. Wow, some news just came across the tape about Biogen, their Alzheimer's drug that was, some people thought it had so much promise, scrapped. We're not talking about more testing or anything. We're talking scrapped. Stock is down $83 to $237. Ouch. Down 26%. That's a big oopsie. A lot of people thought that drug was actually going to work, and evidently it's not even close. Wow, you don't even see that. S&P futures down 11.25 now. They were up when we came in. NASDAQ futures down 32, so not so bad on the NASDAQ side. Dow down 109. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 34.3%, FTSE up 44.6. CAC around down 1, so call that one flat as they're still struggling with the Brexit thing over there. It looks like they're going to for a while. UK up 42. These guys have all quieted down all of a sudden. 42, that's 0.2%. Shanghai up 10.3. Hang Seng down 249, that's 0.8%. We got oil going the other way today. Down 49 cents, but still 59.74, which is the highest we've seen in a while. It was over $60, which is, that's been a big move. Brent up 68.10. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB, $1.90. So anybody filling up is gonna pay more than you did 3 months ago. Home heating oil is a $1.99. We've got gold is trading up $14, $13.15. Wow. Silver up 25 cents, $15.75. So big move there with the Fed deferring the rate hike. And a palladium set yet another record. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways. We did have an earlier crash on the outbound Kennedy just before Cumberland. That crash has been clear, but there's some resulting congestion on the Kennedy in both directions out near O'Hare and in that area. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower, normal traffic volume. Same with the Stevenson. Although out near Bolingbrook in the southwest suburbs on I-55 northbound just before Weber Road, there's a crash blocking the left lane. Southside expressways are looking good. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Weather today, more rain this morning. Very similar forecast to yesterday. Cloudy skies, rain early. Could see some sunshine this afternoon, a high of 45. Right now it is cloudy and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72. Right now it's mostly clear and 60. In sports, Bulls were in Washington last night. They beat the Wizards in overtime, 126-120. Suns were off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were off. First four NCAA action, North Dakota State topped NC Central for the 16 seed play-in, 78-74. Their reward, they get to play Duke and probably lose by 50. Arizona State with a nice win over St. John's, 74-65. So they advanced as the 11 seed, and they'll take on 6-seeded Buffalo. CBI tournament, DePaul last night beat Central Michigan in the first round, 100-86, so their season will advance. Looking forward to the 64 round, the official start of the NCAA tournament is this morning, 11:15 a.m. Central Time from Des Moines, Wells Fargo Arena. It'll be Minnesota versus Louisville. Again, that's 11:15. That'll tip off the tournament. Some other games of note today. Bradley, 15 seed from Peoria, will take on number 2 seeded Michigan State at 145, also from Des Moines. Maryland, out of the Big Ten, will take on Belmont, who was a play-in winner. That's in Jacksonville, Florida at 2:10 p.m. Marquette will play at 3:30 from Hartford, Connecticut against 12 seeded Murray State. That should be a good one. A lot of people think Murray State will be the inevitable 12-over-5 winner this year. That's pretty much it for area games of note, except for two Big Ten teams tonight. It'll be Michigan, the 2 seed, taking on Montana, the 15 seed from Des Moines at 8:20 p.m. Central Time. And then the late game is Purdue, the 3 seed, taking on Old Dominion, 8:50 p.m. tip-off from Hartford, Connecticut. So all kinds of action today beginning in the NCAA tournament. Lastly, Major League Baseball, a regular season game, game 2 of the year in Japan, has Seattle leading Oakland 3-2 in the 6th inning. But more importantly, future Hall of Famer Ichiro is expected to announce his retirement after the ballgame. Chief.
Ichiro.
So let me just ask, who this is, in my opinion, the greatest weekend in sports. The NC2As and these rounds, these early rounds, provide some of the most exciting and emotionally satisfying basketball or sporting events that I get to see, and I really this is the time when I really enjoy watching college basketball. But who do you guys think is the most dangerous team out there? And we'll take Duke off the board because of Williamson. If they play well, that kid plays well, and their other people play well around him, they can run the board, I think. But other than Duke, who do you think is the most dangerous team out there?
I'll go first. I think North Carolina is very good, which is not a dark horse by any means, but they're really scary, and they've shown that even with Zion, they'll play Duke toe to toe. But I still think Duke's the better team. I really like Michigan and Michigan State out of the Big Ten, but I don't like anyone else out of the Big Ten. I think Purdue could be dangerous, and their bracket is favorable. I would say North Carolina, Michigan, and Michigan State would be the three teams that I think could make some noise and potentially give Duke some problems.
I will tell you that and again, I put Duke off to the side. They beat Virginia twice. But I will tell you that I think Virginia and Michigan State of the teams that are out there right now, I think Virginia is the biggest problem. It's going to be the biggest problem for teams that have not faced it on a regular basis. That defense and their style of play is completely different than what most of these teams have encountered, and. I think they are a scary team, and they took North Carolina. They can take North Carolina down, and I'm looking at them to make a deep run. I hope Duke's supporting cast and Williamson can hold it together, because obviously that's where I went to school, and so I'm going to root for them. But Virginia is a very frightening team in respect that they are so different from what a lot of other teams will face.
I actually have Virginia in the title game against Duke in my bracket, but for whatever reason, I always feel nervous about them, because for whatever reason, even though they are so good and have been consistently good for 7-8 years now, they never make a deep run in the tournament. Last year became the first one seed to ever lose.
Yeah, that worked out last year, Virginia.
Right.
I think that was... They weren't ready for whatever. They weren't ready for UBC to come in, UMBC to come in and smack them.
Yeah, and that team really played just an up-tempo style and just really took it to them. And Virginia just it was like when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson, like they didn't know what hit them. But Virginia plays Gardner Webb in the first round, assuming a shocker doesn't happen, they'll win that game. Then they play either Oklahoma or Ole Miss, and I think they'll easily beat one of those two teams. Then they play either Kansas State or Wisconsin or Oregon, likely. Then it starts getting tougher, and I think they're favored. Then they play Tennessee on paper, and Tennessee has been the number one team in the country for a good part of the year. So Virginia does not have an easy route, and then if they do make the Final Four, they'll likely play either North Carolina or Kentucky, and that won't be easy.
There's some really good teams out there. I just think that their style of play is so much different than the other teams that I would pick for a Final Four. But okay, that I think that makes sense. Anyway, I'm reveling in the tournament now. I'm quite happy to see these games start, and I just plan on sitting back and enjoying good basketball and try to put my fanboy outlook on Duke. I try to put that off to the side somewhere so I can actually enjoy those games.
When you walk through my office today, like it is every year, everyone has like the two monitors, and one monitor is work, and one monitor is inevitably streaming one of the games that's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just through.
We've actually put out some guidance to people saying, look, don't shut down our, because I'm presiding over a webinar today that's going firm wide, and we'll go out to our client base. We got about 500 or 600 people on the
Hollywood Square is with Lou,
and that will shut down. That kind of activity by our employees will shut down the webinar.
So let me get this straight. I got my choice of my two monitors. I either a baseball or a basketball game or a Lou.
That's an easy choice. I was going to say that's not even a hard choice. That's an easy choice. So what we're talking about, just and I mean this has not hit the press lately, but we talked about it a little bit last week, is the hashtag MeToo impact on how you deal with sexual harassment cases. And one of the really interesting things and that I note in this thing is that the hashtag MeToo, I mean, preview of coming attractions, the hashtag MeToo movement stands on its head a lot of the guidance that we would typically give to our clients about, you know, defenses in these kinds of cases. And the fact that you can end up, I hesitate to use the word runaway train kind of situations, but when, you know, when the initial information comes out, if it gets traction on social media, you know what, you don't need to be talking to lawyers, because we'll come in with you know, legal defenses, and you know, maybe the statute of limitations is run, and all of that goes right out the window when these cases start spinning up, even to the extent that settlement agreements, for example, if you settled cases, you know, a number of years ago, with confidentiality clauses in them, which is how we do these things, you can expect to find people breaching their settlement agreements and coming in and saying, "Oh yeah, this guy was a problem, or this woman was a problem, and I, you know, I knew about it, and yeah, I signed this agreement, and I got a bunch of money on the condition that I keep this quiet, but I just my conscience just won't let me do that anymore." And you know, we pose the question to companies: Are you going to sue this? It's usually a woman. Are you going to sue this woman for breaching the settlement agreement and throw more gasoline on the Twitter mob, the Twitter fire that's erupted around this? So,
Lou,
that's going to be the discussion this morning.
Everything that goes and does and becomes, in my judgment, very ignorant. There's always a too far. First of all, as everybody knows, I wouldn't harass anybody. I think everybody deserves their space, their body.
You just finished harassing me.
Well, that's different. Well, that's another part of this. You can absolutely harass all white males. You can call them everything.
It's very difficult to illegally harass. You can always harass people.
Yeah.
It's illegal harassment. Yeah. It's very difficult to illegally harass members of the oppressor class. I agree.
What I'm going to say with this is that, you know, we are pushing the point where and it's not just young people, but the idea that we're going to take everything to this court of public opinion. We don't trust our own justice system. A contract is not a contract. A promise is not a promise. Whatever it is, once we blow all this up, we have chaos, Lou. We have absolute chaos.
Let me give you a classic example. I mean, we were talking about this as to whether or not we'll raise this during the webinar, but you know, the Harvey Weinstein case is sort of the marker for all this when this all started blowing up. But one of Mr. Weinstein's attorneys, a guy who joined the Weinstein defense team, is a black law professor at Harvard, very well thought of, really smart guy. And you know, I always, going through high school and college, I always was given to understand that everybody, even the most loathsome criminal, you know, the worst murderer, the most awful, you know, whatever, Jeffrey Dahmer,
yep,
Wayne Gacy, these people are entitled to a defense, you know, and it's the job of the legal establishment to defend even the most awful people and make the state prove its case so that you don't end up with tyranny. You know, you don't encourage tyranny. This professor at Harvard has been attacked by the Harvard Law student body, and who have gone after him saying, you can't represent Harvey Weinstein. My God, he sexually harassed women. And I'm going, yeah, in the big scheme of criminal offenses, you know, it's not great, but heavens, there's lots worse. But they are saying that he should be removed from the faculty. They're saying that his role at the law school needs to be reduced. and the idiotic dean of the Harvard Law School has not come out and strongly in favor of saying, listen, anybody, everybody's in favor of a defense, and the fact that a lawyer selects and goes for a client to defend him does not tar the lawyer with the client's offenses. You know, we have an obligation as professional attorneys to defend people who need help or who are willing to pay for it. And the fact that this is you know, one of these cases, and even if they're not willing to pay for it, you know, we're expected to provide that kind of assistance, even when the guy is guilty.
Because that means every
he's guilty.
That means every public defender should be shot on sight. Because look at the stuff they have to defend.
That is a ground rule, bedrock, basic rule of lawyering, and yet this system, as you noted, Chief, it's turning that rule on its head.
Yeah,
and that's just another marker of what you've just said, which is at some point we're going to end up running over the rights of people in some kind of strange social justice pursuit. It's a little bit like I noted the people on my Twitter feed, you know, saying, "Boy, I wish we were like New Zealand, where our leader could just say, 'All right, that's it. We've had a shooting. I'm confiscating all those guns.'" And I'm going, "Yeah, I don't think we want that kind of a system here. I think that's a disaster. And watching what's happening in New Zealand is exactly why you've got a constitutional government system and you know, limitations on your executive branch."
Well, and I'm gonna, this, you know, whatever.
Not to mention it's totally ineffective. It'll stop law-abiding citizens from using those weapons.
Like I could, if I was going to run for president like the rest of the country, I probably couldn't say this, but you know what, Lou, I'm so tired of this, you know, poor classes of people that are totally oppressed. You know, women can be every bit as aggressive sexually and economically as men.
Yes, they can.
And what I'm saying is the only way, when you look at, I'm going to make a connection between Chicago politics and the, what's his name, situation. What's the guy's name you just mentioned, the CBS guy? Tells his name, Carmy Weinstein.
Weinstein.
When you go out here for a construction job in Chicago and you pay $6 million when you know it's worth $4 million, everybody who has an ounce of gray matter knows that there's $2 million in play, right? Because if it went out legitimately bid, the number would have been $4 million, and it's not. It's $6 million. So that means if I'm the mayor and I'm not a dum-dum, which I hope I'm not, And you are the construction guy and you're getting $6 million, I know that I've got money in Lou's pocket and so does Lou. Now, I'm not going to come and say, "Give it to me." That would be dumber. But I'm going to say, "You know, I like this Matty Weber. Produced my show for 15 years and blah, blah, blah. And always, he's a great kid. Now he's not a kid anymore. He's a good man. He's running for alderman. I sure wish that he's having his benefit. I think Matty needs like 50 tickets bought. I'm going to call you. And you're not going to hesitate, okay? Because you know, now if the number was $4 million, the response would be, "Hey, Chief, this thing was bid out. I made my 8%. I paid everybody off. There's no money left to be glad handing you." That's what the answer should be, okay? So reach forward to Harvey Weinstein. If there's 15, whether it's good-looking women in the room, good-looking men in the room, all dying to get this actor or actress's job, it's paying $1 million. There isn't a person in that room that wouldn't do it for $600, $500. If you were a clean man or clean woman, you would have the salary in the room, $1 million. And I'd look out there and I'd say, "Man, there's 15 of the hottest women I've ever seen in my life." All of a sudden, the sign should change, $950, $9, $850, until finally enough people walk out where I can interview two and pick one. But instead, somebody in that room is going to say, "That's a dirty old man. I'll bet if I do some oral sexting on him, I get this job." And she does it. Okay? Who's harmed here? The other 14 girls in the room, or guys, or whatever. I mean, in this world, it could be guys too. Who's harmed? She's not harmed.
No, I agree. I mean, that's the situation. That analytical situation is exactly what just took down the head of the entertainment company that just resigned. because he was having a relationship with a woman who was, you know, really upset that she wasn't getting parts based on the fact that she was sleeping with him.
Oh, that was
allegedly sleeping with
him. Who was the one who said that she didn't sleep with one of the country singers? That was her name, the mother and daughter combo. That was
the Judds?
Yeah, one of the Judds said she wouldn't do something for Harvey and didn't get the job.
Right.
That's Ashley Judd.
Oh, right. No, I'll
bet she's right.
Yeah, I would also say that kind of thing has been going on for some time, and I'm not saying it's part of the coin of...
Since civilization was around? They don't call it the oldest profession for nothing.
Yeah, so, I mean, these kinds of situations are part of being people. It's one of the reasons why, as an employment lawyer, I'm always going to have a job. And this kind of thing, I mean, we talk about, it's also one of the reasons why, and the EEOC is right on top of this and admits this freely, that the training we're undertaking on this stuff doesn't work. And people said, why doesn't it work? And I said, well, part of the reason it doesn't work is because you're dealing with fundamental human motives and motivations that you're not going to train out of people that are wired in there for, you know, well, Luke, genetics or hormones or
I'm going to be on the dumb side of this. You're on the bright side of this. I'm on the dumb side of this. Why if I'm on the board and I'll pick a guy? I mean, Mark Harmon just signed for another year for an NCIS. Do we really have to pay? Or Trout? He's going to make $440 million?
$430.
Okay. He wouldn't have signed for $425? Where's the other bid? I mean, so an extra makes $8 a day, whatever all those guys make, and all of a sudden you're on a show and you're making $400,000? There's not somebody that would do it for $350,000. I mean, when you see these people getting paid this much by a Harvey Weinstein, it's your obligation on the board or the president to say, do we really have to do this? What's going on here? I mean, there needs to be an adult in the room. What is this guy doing hiring all these beautiful women for this kind of money? And it always looks like he's got a couple on his arm. What's going on here? Because the guy looks like Jabba the Hutt, for God's sake.
I agree. I mean, I think there's a real unwillingness to address that flip side of that equation, and that is another, that'll get the Twitter mob going after us if we try to make an issue out of it. But well, that's true. This whole blame the victim thing. I had a good friend who got fired by a Secretary of the Air Force for basically talking to a young woman who had alleged she was sexually assaulted at a party, and he said, well, how much had you had to drink? And she said, oh, I was black, almost blackout intoxicated. And he goes, well, look, don't do that. You know, don't get into that situation.
Well, yeah, it makes sense.
If you walk down a dark alley with wads of cash hanging out of your pocket, you got some responsibility if you get rolled. And they fired him for that.
Well,
for making that comment.
It still doesn't clear the roller or the, but the,
no. You're still got a criminal assault, but for heaven's sakes, it's the same bit about, you know, going, I believe it was in Camille Paglia, who I think is a terrific writer, making the comment that if you're getting so intoxicated that you're out of control or you're not in complete control, or you're a young woman at a frat party or something, you've just basically walked out into the savannah of East Africa with a bunch of stakes taped to you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
it doesn't excuse the conduct, but it certainly talks about, you know, we've got responsibility to this.
Well, I'm going to split a hair here, but if your intoxication means that you come on to a guy and make it seem like you like the dude, that's one thing. If you're passed out and somebody takes advantage of you, that guy deserves to get shot. I mean, why would
I agree. I mean that's but again, what are you doing drinking to the point where you pass out?
Well, that's true.
This is the biggest thing in these campus situations, which are nightmares of failure of due process and violation of due process. If you look at these Title IX cases, so many of them involve people getting just drunk and having drunken sex, and then waking up the next morning and going, "Oh my God, what did I do?"
Well, Lou,
a lot of those cases.
I will say this: I was listening to I met Steph last night. She and her husband, and terrific couple. And so they were saying how they came downtown on Saturday morning and how there's people puking on every block. Well, I'm going to say that if you listen to the show, you know I love to tip a glass. I hate being drunk and I hate being hungover. So where does that put me? I don't think I've ever, the thought of throwing up at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, that is so light years away from me having a couple of glasses of wine, Lou. You know, it's not even on the same planet. What is with these people? I don't know.
But binge. I think it's actually the trends have gone down a little bit. But binge drinking among high school students when my kids were in high school was an epidemic, and that was in the late 90s.
But I mean, it can't be fun.
It was an epidemic. I don't know if it still is, but that that habit carried on into college. I was astounded when the sexual assault cases, Title IX cases started surfacing, reading just how much alcohol was being consumed in these kinds of situations.
Well, we used to have kegs of beer were legal at Notre Dame, and there's a lot of people, including me, a few times probably had one or two too many beers. But the thought of somebody passing around a bottle and taking shots to really put you over the edge, that never crossed anybody's mind. But the idea that you're 170 pounds or whatever you were at those times, or the girls are 110, and you're going to drink five shots on top of beers. Who the hell can do that at 110 pounds?
I'm going to defer to Maddie on this because I'm not part of this culture. But wasn't there some deal about mixing Red Bull and alcohol so that you could stay conscious longer?
That was a big
drinking
thing. It was a big thing for cocaine. But Lou, we got a dash. We'll talk about this next week, buddy. SP futures still down 950. NASDAQ futures down 29. We come back to Mr. Farhan Hamzy. Big news of the day. BIIB, Biogen, Alzheimer drug clunked, down $88, 27%. That's a bad one this morning. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes. If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We also have Rafari Hamzy of Hamzy Analytics. SP Futures
good
down
morning.
10. They were up when we came in, but they've made a turn the other way. NASDAQ Futures down 30. Big news in the morning, an individual stock. This is BIIB, which is Alzheimer's drug, which was fairly highly touted. Not didn't just turn up, you know, not so hot. It turned up as a clunk, and they just withdrew it. Down $89, which is like 28%. That's a big number.
Whatever goes up has to come down, right?
Evidently.
Yeah. Also, seasonality. Last year, this time, we took 3,000 points out of the Dow in 3 weeks. 1,600 in the first week, and then reversal of 1,400 on the way up. So it was pretty much same week last week. Last year, exactly. So around Persian New Year, which is today is the first day of the spring. And so, Happy New Year to all the Persians out there, Persian Americans. The issue is it going to repeat that? I don't know. Market will not try to stay to the same texture, because then it would be easy money. Somebody like the chief will own half of Chicago if it was that simple.
That's true.
And his cohorts. So it's not going to happen like that. But the seasonality has worked. There's actually a pretty decent chapter of it in one of the books I read, which actually John Nigerian was also a contributor. Called Master Traders, don't forget it. That was a plug. But seriously, if you look at seasonality, it does play, but it's not going to be exact. It's not going to be same type of a day or same amount of the move, but there's a little bit of push down. But I also talked to some fundy guys who are fairly both positioned and think that their earnings are going to be better than expected. The issue is they have a problem with guidance, and that's because of what else is going on.
Well, everybody in the world is predicting the slowdown. Look at the Federal Express numbers.
Yeah. Well, that's a safety, too. They can, under Dodd-Frank, it's safer for you to give that kind of warning anyway. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I have a technical question for you and
for me
and our executive producer.
What bestows on me such an honor, sir?
Well, you went to Princeton, and our executive producer hangs around this high-tech industry all the time the rest of his day.
Got you.
It says, U.S. allies defy Trump administration plea to ban Huawei, is that how you pronounce it, from 5G networks. I have an understanding from a client or people that I talk to.
Or maybe a new phone you got?
My sources, shall we say.
Okay.
That we have a problem with, when I say we, there's a problem with these guys and President Grumpino, like banning them and booting them out of here and arresting them and things, and that my sources tell me these guys own the lion's share of all the U.S. patents on this 5G stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, that's what I meant.
So, did they research it or they bought it?
I think they were here and got some and bought some, and I don't know how they got them, but they evidently are we willing to go down that road and yank the patents from them and give them to somebody else?
I don't know. That should be it. Well, under And we've had national emergencies recently for lesser things.
Yeah, for lesser things.
Like Mexico not willing to pay for something, we declare national emergency. So,
but I'm not timing any. This is
a very good point.
But
how good do you assess your quality of your sources?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, okay.
Right. A couple of listeners of the show are in that business.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. That's close enough. Oh, geez.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the number's 50 and these guys have 48 or whatever, they got 10 or key or what. I mean, who the hell knows? But I'm saying I never even thought of that.
But by the way, you know, one of the two cities coming up on 5G, one of them is Chicago, right?
Well, they're talking about it, but
I mean, there's a plan. I don't know if it's Verizon. Maybe it's Verizon. For April something, April 15th, April 1st, somewhere in there. Somewhere in April, the plan is for two cities. I think one is Chicago. I forget where the other one is. It's maybe Atlanta. They're planning to go to 5G.
Well, some of
and
your...
And then, of course, it's a chicken and the egg. You need also phones to go to 5G.
Well, don't you need... that's what I'm asking.
But you need the cell towers first.
Well, I'm asking you guys, if you want to do, like, remote surgeries, something really, really... High tech with a million bits of information. Don't you need 5G?
Yeah. Intuitive surgical will go crazy on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Intuitive surgical. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As if my friend who founded it doesn't have enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, last I checked on him, he said that G650 wasn't fast enough for him. So he kept that for the family and he bought himself a two-seater equivalent of a F5, I think from Sweden or somewhere, without armament. So when he goes to, he is in the Melno Park. So when he took one goes, but he got a lot of investments in Southern California. He was 2 years behind me at college.
Furry, you better
same
keep
club, by the way, that Bob Mueller went to at Princeton. He said, listen, I just have boots in the office. When we have to go to a meeting quickly, put the boots on before ejection. You need boots. I said, I'll put the boots on. The pilot sits there and boom, I'm in the back seat. We go Mach 2 and we're there. It's like personal Concorde.
Well, you got one of those.
Yeah, yeah. So, boom, boom. So, anyhow, he founded, he wrote the first check for Intuitive Surgical, and he's one heck of a lucky guy. He also put in money in Netscape.
I have a question for you. If you have a...
Sand, it was on Sand Hill Road he was in. I forgot the name. Something Ventures, I forgot, but they were everywhere.
So, I have a question for you. When the Concorde was flying, or something similar, I guess it was nothing really similar, how far away did they have to clear... the people ahead of that thing when it came in for a landing. Otherwise, you'd be running up everybody's behind, wouldn't you?
You're talking about on a F5 type coming for a landing?
I'm talking about even like the Concorde. I mean,
Concorde, okay.
How much do they have to clear the field?
But you're not coming at that speed. Your landing speeds are still limited to, that's where the nose was down, you need a little bit larger wings. You still need, remember, that's a human-machine interface.
I'm not talking about the landing.
You can only land up to certain speed.
I know, I'm talking about the landing.
The density, and also you processing the landing procedures, you know. So you're still landing within, I would suspect these are landing around 150 to 180 miles per hour. So it's still pretty fast, but that's what you're coming down.
No, I'm talking maybe, about...
somewhere in that range. You're not going to come in and land at 400 miles per hour.
No, I'm talking about if you're... I was in the... get a load of this. Talk about a weird story. I don't think I haven't flown in so long. Do they still let you listen to the pilot? They used to. I don't know if they do anymore.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I think some airlines do on because now you have so many channels. One of them is the GPS map that shows where you are, and if the pilot speaks, it interrupts there, yeah.
Well, I was off from the CBOE to deliver lectures and options to all these people that ran the money at Ohio State and all these other places, and
gotcha.
Pretty interesting group, so... But the weather was horrible. So I get back to Columbus Airport, and I get on my plane, and it's pouring. We take off, it's pouring. But then I think I'm going to listen to the pilot. Well, we've got a lady pilot, which doesn't, it doesn't matter. So you pick up, what, Toledo Center, and then you get kicked from Toledo to Aurora Center, and then they kick you to O'Hare,
right when you're in
the pattern. Uh-huh. So, of course, it's raining like stinks. So we're already in the pattern, like over Indiana. You know, we're circling a little bit behind some other people, and then we get a line. The whole routine. So we're like United 220 or whatever. So the pilot comes out and goes, but I'm saying, this is what I was asking about the Concorde. I don't think you're going to have the Concorde cruising around Indiana at 200 miles an hour waiting to land. I mean, I guess you could, but it would be an interesting...
No, the cruise speed is not 200 miles an hour.
Well,
landing speed. You go 200 for landing, but maybe 180, 140, somewhere in there for landing.
I know, but I'm saying...
The cruise speed is 2 miles.
I know, so you're not going to have these guys...
So like 1,400 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're not going to have the Concorde in like a holding pattern over Indiana going 220 miles.
No. You know why? The fuel cost.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge, okay, here's what they shut it off. The operational cost. Because the engines were old, you can't have... those engines, not something was renewed, okay? Running very, very old technology. Fuel chemistry has changed, okay? And also, computer efficiency. Why do you have so much autopilot? Save fuel. We talked about it last time,
yeah.
Remember? Those were not available in the 60s when Concorde was built. It actually, Shaw wanted to buy a few just for, you know, show off, name type, because we didn't have that kind of traffic anyway. But I had friends at Morgan Stanley, as you know, I consulted for them in the prop division, and there were very few of these guys available. I mean, IQ wise, I've never seen anything like this before. And these guys had Concorde tickets. Always on standby. I mean, London, Tokyo, and I don't know if he went to Tokyo, but for London to U.S., that's a must. I mean, the drivers were on standby. Get them to JFK, they're going to be on next Concorde, they're going. And sometimes they would go to London and come back the next, same day. Or, yeah, they would go to London, come back same day.
Well, I was on
by the time they land back at New York, the same day.
I was on a parallel runway, and I watched one of those things.
And here's what they were saying. Very noisy, okay? Until you pass the barrier, sound barrier, because then it got deaf. Because your ears are going to be ahead of the engine. Because the speed of the engine getting to your ear, you're gone forward. And very polluting, very, very polluting. I mean, the trail of it was massive. So it became very, very inefficient to run that. And nobody was willing to design a new engine for it. Actually, the body design wasn't too bad. It was, although it was heavy, we have better... material and composites technology now and manufacturing of it, you know. Remember, biggest challenge we had at Northrop was how to manufacture this damn thing lighter. Have a strength of a titanium or steel, actually, yeah, strength of a steel by using titanium instead, and lighter than aluminum by using graphite, and how to make the two, how to make graphite to titanium. Because remember, you got surface you have to move. Trim it, you know, that kind of stuff. So for that reason, back then in the 60s, they could have never done this. So there's talk around, there's some ideas have kicked around. If you are subscribed to Aviation Week and Spec Technology, AWST, it's a great news letter. I mean, what do you call it? I think it's a weekly, yeah. It's a weekly magazine. I used to read it in Iran when I was a kid. My dad would get it in the 60s. Still has it now, it's online. There are some people who have been kicking it around, the idea of coming in our SST, you know, supersonic transport, around now, maybe. But again, it's not going to be $300, you know, for New York to Los Angeles. But for the business traveler, who time is of value, that's the only way to go.
Well, time is of value in his own mind.
My friend couldn't wait for that, so he had to have his own F-5, equivalent of F-5. No armament, of course, you can't have... Civilians cannot buy airplanes with their armament on it.
Would
you want to have one of those?
No, yeah, we'll finish this quick story about this flight.
Here's the problem. You got to lose a little bit of weight, young man. Because on ejection, it's going to be difficult.
I'm not. I told you we had the client who flew the MiG-17, but it was the Chinese version, so
yes.
He would never fit out the window. He said your shoulders would be, you wouldn't go with your shoulders.
Yes. Well, what do you call it? A friend of mine who was the Israeli investment manager, he bought a MiG-15 and kept in Chino Airport, which is California. It's a big area for artifacts, aerospace, aircraft. You know, the B-24s there. There are very few little things left, but they're there. They use it in the parades and all that. And I don't know if he still has it or not. He may have sold it. He went through some cash crunch at some point. He sold everything, but he had bought a MiG-15s. Actually, had flown in Korea with the Chinese markings. But this was Russian made. It was Russian made Chinese markings had flown in Korean War.
Well,
I saw many pictures of it. We were planning to go and take a look at it. I wouldn't want to fly in it. Well, first of all, it was the first one seater anyway. I'm not sure if he even flew in it or not.
Well, this guy, this dude,
beautiful museum pieces.
They wrecked his plane. He was 17, and he got a new engine. Right? I don't know where the
hell. Oh, wow.
Where you buy an engine for the damn thing? So he's at this airport. He takes off. Right. Evidently, there's things you don't think of when it's not your job. He says, "I went straight up." I go, "What'd you go straight up for?" He goes, "Well, because if something conked out, I want to land on somebody's house. I want to be able to land back in the airport." I never thought of that. Evidently, when you test an engine, you run it up and down the runway until you. At one point, you got to put it in the air, right? So he says, "What you do is you start it and you go essentially straight up because you want to be above the airport if it conks." Well,
right.
Of course, it conks. So down he comes and there's like some fire coming out of it. So he lands and all the idiots at the airport evidently run out and put foam all over the whole plane, which evidently destroys the plane because it keeps the heat in and it all just melts.
Yeah.
So he basically lost his plane. But he's telling me, yeah, I got the Chinese version. The windows evidently are smaller than the Soviet version because the people are smaller.
Yeah.
It's anyway sort of an. What do you make of? Well, we got you here. Hope you're not a long biogen. First of all,
no, actually, but I have video. I got a good friend. We should get you also know Admiral. Admiral runs the biotech fund. I haven't seen him this morning yet. He'll come into the chat. Maybe
he'll
come in slightly wounded. That's because they usually buy a lot of these names and then they hedge it. Using what's the ETF for?
I know the biotech. I know David always
biotech. Yeah. They hedge it, but partially. Obviously, they have a bias, so it's not 100. You can't. If you pay 100%, you're not going to move anywhere. Why are you in the market?
Well, this is
certain times you do, but typically they. They have a bias up or down. They adjust the beta using the.
I've reached after all these years of experience. I'm not going to tell you. I wish I could. The absolute best.
They have to kill me.
No, the absolute best strategy going forward. Because there's a million strategies, right? And there's a time for every strategy. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you. I think I'm capable of basically taking every option strategy and telling you where the holes are in it, and where the strong points are. Well, lately now the new one is the new strategy that is. Threatening to take over a lot of places, even people I do work for. It makes me nervous as hell, to be honest with you. Excuse my French. Is now we have this small sample of get-up-and-go stocks, and we hedge them with, general puts like in the Qs or something, where you're going to buy... Your basket is like five or six stocks that are momentum stocks, and then you hedge it with the general puts. What do you think the first question out of my mouth is? Well, what if?
Okay, IBB, that was the name. They hedged with IBB, the Nasdaq biotech.
Yeah, well, but in this one I understand, but the one I'm talking about, there's people that want to be long Amazon and Netflix and all that stuff and buy like Q puts.
Yes.
QQQ puts. My first thing out of my mouth is, well, what happens if one of these things clunks and the market doesn't? Well, what do you mean? I said, well, what if Amazon goes down 30% and your puts don't
exactly.
move?
What do you mean?
Yeah,
well, find out. Well, hang around and you'll find out what I mean.
But, quick story, to where...
These novices, incredible.
Well, the funny part is back when remember that thing that, was it the XMI? Well, what was the 30 stack?
Oh, XMI? Yeah, I haven't touched it since the first Gulf War.
I'm not even sure the thing's still alive, but the first Gulf War, I was... doing some work, and I had a pretty good sized portfolio, and Dr. J was saying, why don't you take
this is 1991 era,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and I go, what if we're having a beer? And he goes, what if we put something together where we, because what happened, Fari, is the indexes got so expensive, people were buying into like the XMI and the OEX, the volatility in the indexes were actually bigger than they were in any of the individual stocks, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
So I said, Jan, we could probably do. We could put together. We would actually take all 30 stacks in the XMI. I think it was 30, right? And I'll figure out a number, and we'll buy calls, sell puts.
No, I'm sorry. It was 20.
It was 20. So because it was 30, I was thinking 30 would have been a real lot. We did 20 in
major market index. It was 20. Yeah.
And we did 20, and I did synthetics. So I bought
calls. I'm dating myself by saying that, by the way. That should be like in British Museum.
Yeah.
How past it? How old it is? Wow.
But this is too sophisticated for most people, but I bought calls, sold stock, so I did some kind of a ratio back spread using the stock.
Okay.
So I'm buying all those calls at, say, a 25 vol, 28 vol, 30 vol in individual stocks. And I'm selling, because people are going all over this index, I'm selling puts that I have covered by the individual stocks in the XMI at like a 50. So essentially, you know, was sort of a layup.
You're long the low vol and you short the high vol.
But here's the weird part. Even in those days when the liquidity was better, I struggled to get the position I wanted on in all 20 stocks. But I did it. And we ended up making...
But you know that. You don't need all 20, right?
That's just where my point
is. You need a good portion of it.
All right, now listen to me. All right, listen to me.
I am.
You're already taking the opposite side of my conclusion, which would have put you in trouble. So we ended up making a small fortune on this.
Right.
You know, and I mean, Jan and I split, whatever, I don't forget what the deal was, but of course I did the work, but at the end of the day, you know, and we're patting ourselves on the back, I went back and I looked. I mean, because I like to do analysis, you know. I went back. If I would have missed 3 of the 20, we virtually made all our money in 3 stocks. So American Express got annihilated, went down like a mother, and it was like 2 others. If I would have said, just like you said, screw American Express, it's not going anywhere. If I would have not done those 3 stocks, we'd have gotten obliterated.
Right.
I mean, because it was.
Well, this is also the problem with small sample size. You know, 20 names is very tough to technically hedge over a long period of time.
Yeah, but it's better.
My question to you was,
it's better than 500.
Trading, how much of back testing was it done?
I don't need a back test to say that if I can buy premium at a 30 and sell it at a 50, I got a winner. I know enough to do that.
Okay, well, we had 1 minute left. I'm not going to get into that argument with you. You're a smart guy. But you realize you just said what you just said, answer your own question.
What I'm saying is I needed all of them.
Yeah, I realize that.
Yeah.
But the issue is that what percentage of time?
Well, but we got it on for like 2-3 weeks, and then all
Of events. How many times that type of a trade has occurred?
I'm going to say...
How many times having all in you cause you problems? That's the back test question.
In my 40 years, it probably happened twice. Because it was a war going on.
Yeah. See, that's... Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it took a war. You know what it reminded me of? Have you ever watched the movie Midway?
Yes.
When the Japanese guy, we haven't heard from Scout One yet, and Scout One was the one that would have seen the U.S. carriers and the thing
right,
engine
right,
problems.
That's a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah. All you got to do is have the wrong one, right? But I mean, yeah. I think out of the money we made half of it in American Express.
Yeah.
So if you'd have forgot about that one, you had trouble.
Well, so what I used to do with the XMI, I had an AI package, which I bought. I didn't write it. I bought, and there was no Windows back then. It was
no.
DOS.
Yeah, it was all DOS.
I made it to multitasking. I had an AI package that would run, look at XMI, would give me a bias every 5 minutes. Then we'll check out of that package, we'll go into Option View. Remember Option View?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay. We'll go to Option View, bring up the matrix, and say, if that's a bias, where's your most cheapest to buy call or put versus most expensive to sell call or put?
Okay? Right. Oh,
with
yeah.
that bias. And it's not, obviously it's not both sides. It's one time, sometimes it's on the bearish side, sometimes it's on the bullish side. Depending on what the bias was, you pick that spread and you trade that.
Option View used to do that at Track Data. He said, Fire, we got a dash, buddy. Thank you
we'll
very
talk.
Much.
All the best, my friend.
SP Futures down 11.25. NASDAQ Futures down 34. Again, we were up 2 when I came in. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We'll have Mr. David Handelman in a second. S&P futures now down 11. And they were up last night. They were up when we came in, and then we just tanked a little bit. NASDAQ futures down 34, not as bad. Dow futures are down 99. Big news of the morning is Biogen IDEC, BIIB, down 27 bucks to 86.50. Down 86.59 to 234 as their Alzheimer's drug. Not even a glimmer of success. Evidently yanked from test. I don't think anybody expected that. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 104 now, at 0.9%. FTSE up 20.3%. CAC around down 26.5. These have all moved lower since we talked about them an hour ago. Over in Asia, they haven't moved because they're closed. Nikkei up 42. Shanghai up 10. Hang Seng down 249. So not a whole lot of movement there. Oil down from off highs. Now 39 cents, but 59.84, so it was above 60. Brent 68.18, so we're talking about a $8.30 spread, which is down almost more than $2 in since the beginning of December. So playing that spread, getting out of it, selling it at 10.50 and picking it up at $7.50 has been a winner the last few years with such a huge contract that nobody does it, and I can't do it. And by the way, you can't do it. Our BIPS up 190, which is the highest we've seen it in a real long time. And we've got gold up now $14. $13.15, and silver up 22 cents, $15.54. Gold hits 3 weeks highs. Fed defers rate hikes. Palladium sets record. I don't know anybody who has palladium, but if you do, you're setting a record. Manny, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The Kennedy's been a mess on the outbound side this morning. We had an earlier crash at Cumberland. That's been clear, but now there's a new one on the outbound side just before Harlem. So that's affecting folks heading out to O'Hare, and it's affecting the Kennedy in both directions now. Edens is not looking much better. Eisenhower's our other slow-moving expressway. Looks like we have a crash blocking the left lane of the Tri-State northbound right at the Eisenhower, so that's part of that reason that 290 is moving so slow in both directions. No issues on the Stevenson, though traffic is building to normal volume. Southside expressways have been relatively quiet all morning. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford looking good. On the Stevenson, that earlier crash northbound just before Weber Road is all clear. It's actually been moved to the shoulder, so traffic is getting by there. But that's out near Bolingbrook. As you get further inbound, that's when the traffic gets heavy on the Stevenson. Off the expressways, Rand Road eastbound between, looks like Cuba Road and Quentin Road is closed due to a crash in the northwestern suburbs. And then just west of there, Route 59 at Huff and Miller Road, there is a crash as well. That's out in the northwestern burbs. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, similar to yesterday. Rain in the forecast, lots of clouds, cold temperatures, a high of just 45. Right now it's overcast and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72. Right now it's mostly clear and 61. In sports, Bulls with a nice win over the Wizards, 126-120 in overtime. Suns were off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were both off. First four action, it was North Dakota State over North Carolina Central in the 16-seed play-in game. So they'll take on Duke, 1 versus 16 on Friday. Arizona State beat St. John's 74-65, so Arizona State gets to play 6-seeded Buffalo. Of course, the field of 64 tips off today. The first game will be at 11:15 Chicago time, Minnesota versus Louisville, played in Des Moines, and then there will be 16 games today. CBI action, it was DePaul advancing to the second round of the CBI. Right, they beat Central Michigan.
Who the hell, what's the CBI?
The College Basketball Invitational. It goes...
it's lower than NIT?
Yes.
The Irish didn't even make that?
They may have... were they above 500?
Probably not.
I'd have to look at their record. They may have declined that invite. It's kind of embarrassing. DePaul hasn't done anything in so long that they'll accept anything that they can get. But I'd have to look into it. Kevin would probably know.
Well, if you have any chance of being a team on the up and coming, which I think DePaul thinks they are,
right,
any kind of postseason experience is a good idea.
I agree. And they beat Central Michigan 100-86, so they advanced to the second round of the CBI. Lastly, Major League Baseball, there is regular season action underway in Japan right now between Seattle and Oakland. Looks like that game is tied 4-4 in the eighth. But the big news is that Ichiro is expected to retire after the ballgame.
All right, I'm gonna put everybody in the honor system. Hello, David.
Hi.
Put everybody in the honor system, which is hard to do in this day and age. Without hitting your Google, actually it takes a while to find it even on Google. I'm going to give you one of them, Ichiro. Name me the other three players that have 10 gold gloves and a lifetime 300 batting average, and give me the two guys that are very, very close and just missed. See if you can do that.
I would have no idea.
Maddie, you probably know. Hey, by the way, I'm congratulating you, Mr. Weber. David, I don't know if you were listening. You did not rise to the bait from Lou. I was wondering if you would.
Which was?
About the New Zealand ban on the assault rifle arms. I don't know if you heard that or not, or you were on the phone.
Well, I heard he brought that up, that it was a bad idea.
I know, and I thought for sure that you would engage, but then you did not rise. Does this mean you're maturing or you're hungover?
No, I've learned dealing with, you know, folks on this show and folks that follow us on Twitter and people in everyday life that there's really no point in arguing about politics anymore because no one looks at anything reasonably. They just pick their side and that's the side they stick on.
Even me?
Well, I think you are sort of in the middle, which is good. So I don't engage in that stuff anymore. I just don't care.
Ever?
I try not to.
I'm gonna take the over on that.
I'll, you know, never say never. Sometimes you can't help it, but I try not to because there's no point.
what we're talking about.
And I mean, the fact that people still defend this president blows my mind. So I don't talk about that anymore.
Yeah, you can't even go there with that.
Yeah, the fact that people love guns so much that they wouldn't even reasonably discuss putting a ban on assault weapons. I don't worry about that anymore. People are so obsessed with the women's right to choose. I don't care about that anymore. It's just you can't change someone's mind. So what's the point?
No, but but you would think people could be reasonable. I am absolutely not for, since there is so much fear in this country, the idea of telling somebody they can't own a gun when everybody else has one.
No one said you can't own a gun.
I'm saying, let me finish here for a second. But there's New England to ban all...
I thought you didn't care, man.
Yeah. Well, I care when Chief says something.
Yeah.
Because he's actually reasonable and considers both sides before he makes this decision, usually.
New Zealand to ban all assault arms, military-styled semi-automatic weapons immediately. I would do that this morning. I would. These things have no business. I mean, in our society, absolutely none. I don't care who you are telling me. Now, I will say this though, Maddie, in defense of the other side, the gun people. How many times have you seen, even in your relatively brief lifetime, when the camel's tent or the nose gets under the tent, all of a sudden a big fat camel sitting in there? I mean, if the gun,
as in my dog sleeping in bed.
Yes. Yes.
He made his nose up there one time, and all of a sudden now it's his bed. A permanent residency.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing here? I'm all stretched out. Audrey's got the three mutts in there. Well, she's watching little Benny, the Italian Greyhound. You go in there and you move one of them over. They're looking at you and giving you. They're not growling, but they're groaning. Hey, move over, will you? Anyway, but I would do that tomorrow. The difference between somebody feeling that they need a handgun or a shotgun or hunting or anything like that, need one of these things, to me, that's a stretch you don't need to have. One guy was capable in, what, a half hour?
So wouldn't that be the compromise, though?
I would do that tomorrow.
No one's going to take your guns away, but we're going to compromise and show that 90% of these massacres are with these types of weapons, and so we're going to get rid of them. You don't need them. You don't need a tank. You don't need a nuclear weapon either.
You don't need a machine gun.
Right. It's just common sense.
Well,
me, it's common sense. But
no, Mike Rocco is right. If you're not so good, why can't I get a mortar? Because I'm not a good shot. Why can't I just lob a mortar at you? Even I can fire a mortar, I think. What are you gonna do? You just aim the thing and you drop it in there, and off it goes. Right. I've watched enough TV. Anyway, David, I've been holding my tongue through our other guests, but I've got you to deal with, and I've got Carl Denninger coming on tomorrow. What the hell is going on with the Fed? I don't know if you listened to the
11 of the 17 governors supposedly said no rate increases for the rest of the year, and maybe not until the middle to the end of 20. Some even into 21. So, I mean, the one piece of good news is, if there is some good news out of this, is that I don't think that it was Powell putting a stamp down and everyone saying yes, yes, yes. He did consult everybody, even the non-voting members.
I have virtually... Here's where I'm coming with this, David. I don't know if it's too technical. Maddie, you know, bleep me out or something, and then you and David talk, but... there was the CNBC gang was on after the news conference. This lady who's been on there before, by the way, she's exceptionally attractive, not that I noticed, but she's your beautiful lady representing a firm. There's a lot of that. You're not going to put somebody up there who's, you know, unattractive, male or female. They're the face of your company. I get that. So, but she usually is pretty bright. I mean, very bright. I wish she wouldn't have that job. And usually, she follows, I'm going to say, the party line. You know, just give us the dough, blah, 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 the market looks good. And yesterday she just says, I'm not a glass half empty kind of girl. And, she goes, I never have been, but she goes, something here, I can't put my finger on it, but something is starting to smell. We're going back to this old policy of flooding the place with money. She goes, I'm looking at Japan. They're going back to doing the same thing. She goes, they already own all the ETFs. Where are they going with this? With the negative interest rate, they're declaring that this thing was this major success when it really wasn't. And now we're going back to it, you know, pretty much hell-bent for leather like it was this gleaming success. She goes, all we're doing is pumping up asset prices, and the regular people aren't being brought along with it at all.
She goes, why do we think this is a success and we're going back to it? And the thing of it is, David, it's not, if you look at the numbers, this has been my bitch the whole way through. The idea right now that the rate is 2.5%. If that was true, really true, I would have no problem with the system.
Which number are you talking about?
The federal funds rate.
Okay.
If that was true, I'd have no problem with this. I wouldn't bitch at all. I promise. I absolutely promise. On a stack of Bibles. But it's not true. It's the rate that the Fed is paying banks for excess money that they're getting from people for free. That has nothing to do with the federal funds rate. I asked one of my buddies who used to do this before he retired. He was a federal funds guy. He had a bank, and he would maneuver people money at night, overnight, from banks that had money to banks that needed it. And I said, Todd, if the Fed stopped paying interest, what would the Fed funds rate be? And he looked at me and he goes, you're the only guy in the world that would ask that question. He goes, that's an unbelievable question. And he goes, I'm guessing not even one. There's so much money in the system.
Right.
So where are we going with this? We're continuing to pump up any kind of asset thing. The man looks like a beaten man, like they gave him a lobotomy or something. He's changed totally.
Maybe they did.
From 8 weeks ago. What we need to drain the excess out of this system so savers and people can get a fair shake. And then you'll have 15 swinging idiots come in and talk about how the poor banks with rates low. Let me get this straight. I get to open up a Citigroup office. I got everybody in the world pouring money at me with all kinds of fees. Most people I'm thinking are paying for a checking account because most people I think are under $5,000. And nobody's getting any interest unless you put it there for 6 months or a year, and then it's probably 1%. And I turn around and give that money to the Fed at night at 2.5. How the hell can I be screwing up? I never give a loan out to anybody anymore unless it's Microsoft. What are we doing to this system, David? It's not working for anybody, and yet we're saying it's this huge success. Or where am I wrong here?
I follow charts, so you're a vast resource of information far beyond what I have access to. But and this is total anecdotal, and in the scheme of things, it's probably a pimple on a big cushion. But, you know, I go across the street. I don't bank at Lakeside Bank, you know, one of the old program sponsors. I bank across the way at Chase. But they have a thing where you open up a checking account. I don't know exactly what the terms are. It might be a $10,000 minimum or a $5,000 maintenance or whatever. And I do know that you have to have at least one or two automatic deposits or whatever, but they'll pay you 2.25% on a checking account, charging no fees.
Really?
Yeah, right across the street. So, again, it's anecdotal. I'm not saying that's, you know, a rebuttal to what you brought up. I don't know it. Maybe it's unique, but I wouldn't say that, you know, that the banks are paying no interest.
I'm going to say that those guys, they're being brought to their knees a little bit because Lakeside's paying.
Well, I'm sure.
But I had an account at
I'm sure Harris. That's true.
I had an account at Harris, and then I decided to move my stuff over to Lakeside. And there have been times when in the last 8 years when I've had, you know, a significant amount of money in there. Not millions or anything like that. And I got interest for like less than a buck when I had pushing six figures.
I've had a money market for years at Chase, and they sought fit to come and say that they've raised the interest because on my money market, instead of getting 54 cents a year, I'm now getting $1.11.
Well, I mean, and I
a
and
year,
and I saw so I said to him, so I decided, you know what, since they closed the Board of Trade office or branch,
right.
I said, screw it, I'm going to bring my stuff over to Lakeside. So I let my Harris account drop under $5,000. So I'm going to say that my average with these guys in the last 8 years has been, you know, 50. You know, not big dough or anything like that.
No, 45, 50. It's money.
And I'm going to say that they hit me up for $15 on the 1 month I was under $5,000. Or maybe it was 2 months because I didn't catch it the first month. I'm going to say that they had 50 of my money for 8 years, and I'm down on the deal.
And I'm not laughing. It's absurd.
It's absurd. I'm down on the deal. So, you know, at Lakeside, at least everything's free. And if I, you know, put more, if I flip it over to
another, whatever, one of the
CDs. Well, they have this thing, I forget what it's called, Cashco or something like that. It's like Cashco, something like that. And they're paying. And all you have to do is make sure they get an electronic deposit once or twice a month.
Right. And so, I mean, but still, David, there's something. Why are we constantly bending the system? I mean, did Japan do any good? They're going to declare a huge success because the one thing you can't argue about, if we didn't do it, it would have been a lot worse. Okay. How does anybody argue that one? I mean, I don't even know how you go there. You know what I'm saying?
And again, I'm not, you know, you have much more information on this stuff than I do, so I'm not rebutting. But I guess the overall concept is that if you inflate assets, while here the stock ownership is, you know, much more broad, it's certainly not everybody, but, you know, I'm sure it's more exclusive overseas.
Yep.
But if you inflate assets generally, the wealthy, whether it's 5%, 2%, 1%, however you want to define it, they provide the most taxes, they provide the most jobs, is going to offset, you know, debt issues, corporate and government, and it's going to put a floor under, you know, declines in economic conditions. I mean, that's the concept. Is it going to work? It'll work until it doesn't.
Well, here's the concept in human events. In the course of human events, what was that about? Who started his book that way? Was it Churchill? Somebody. It was the first line of a classic book. In the course of human events, every single time, I'm going to say, David, that people will make an argument that to save them first, and that they'll take care of everybody else, whether they do or they don't. I mean, in the MASH unit, if I was on the bus and my leg was wounded and everybody else's is their lungs are hanging out or something, my first thing I'm probably going to say, if I'm a regular human being, which I am, hey, fix my leg, I'll help you carry the other people in. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, fix me first. Instead of, it's only a leg, you know, the other guys, you know, save them for. But the
By the way, when in the course of human events.
Yeah.
Is the Declaration of Independence.
There you go. And it was a pretty classic document.
Far before Winston Churchill.
Yeah. It's one of these things where give me the dough. But I'm starting to see it percolate down to everybody. Dave, when I say that, walk into a restaurant now and order something. And they'll say, and you go, what are you doing? You just charged me $10 for a glass of wine and the bottle didn't cost you $10 because I know my wine a little bit. Oh, yeah, but you wouldn't believe our lease.
That's right.
But it's the truth.
We talked about this Monday.
Yeah, but it percolates down to people. It trickles down all right, but not, it doesn't trickle down the way you want it to trickle down.
No.
I mean, and yet why do people still... The reason why you still believe it is that people, if it's coming to you, you're going to say anything to everybody as long as you get it first. Do you think that... I won't say anything bad. I think Wilbur Ross probably actually believes if you double his billions, it's good for you.
I mean, yeah, sure.
I mean, Larry Kudlow, I can't believe that. Well, whatever position the guy's in, I've got him on. Well, I'm sure I could go to YouTube. I've got him on tape saying the greatest thing that can happen for the middle class is they have the big corporations have a tax decrease, and I'm going, where's that connection? But
his,
people
his
actually believe
with Reagan.
But okay. How come he never mentions the tax increase the year after the tax decrease?
No, I get it.
Anyway, so yesterday we had the Fed came out, basically genuflected to the market. I won't be crude. And we turn around from being down 13 to up 12 in a nanosecond. And then all of a sudden, what was said later that all of a sudden we're leaking? And this morning, we're up a little bit, now we're leaking again. Is this is what I'm thinking, maybe other people are starting to think a little bit or what?
I think it's nervousness over the trade situation, although my own, you know, strange view of things is, you know, verification, keep tariffs on until we presuming there's a deal, until the Chinese verify that they're complying, I think that's a good thing. That means we'd rather have no deal than a bad deal or a deal that's just on paper. I think it's bullish, not bearish, but I think it's that recognition. But if you watch the action, especially in the futures, I mean, the NASDAQ was up most of the early morning, despite weakness in the other indexes, you know, based on semiconductors and the like. And I really think a big weight, even though it's not part of the Dow, is the Biogen thing. As soon as the Biogen thing came up, the NASDAQ puked, and IBB and XBI and the ETFs associated with biotech got absolutely creamed in the pre-market. And that's what I drew. You don't think an $80 billion company, even if they're going to lose $20 billion on the opening, is going to make that big of a difference on the indexes, but it does.
I'm really... I don't follow this as much as you, David. I wish I did.
And I don't own a share at all, nor am I short, but it's an eye-opener.
I thought that these guys, it was just, in my mind, from what a little bit I've read about this drug, I just assumed, and what do they say, don't ever assume, makes it, whatever. I assumed that the thing would either be a big winner or at least a little bit of a winner where it would help some people out. The thought of it being a total clunk, I never even had that on my radar.
Yeah, they had two associated drugs with a Japanese company and the like, but evidently they had one in phase three trials, so pretty advanced, and one in phase one, and they literally took both of them off the table when the panel said, you know, these are very unlikely to result give the results that you're hoping for. And so they removed both of them off the table, and evidently it has to do with the plaque that, you know, diminishes and gets rid of the memory, whatever, and they can't tell at all whether the plaque causes the dementia or if it's the result of the dementia. And because of that, it just absolutely put these drugs out of the question.
Well,
By the way, Chief, real quick, Joe writes in on Twitter, Chief, who ultimately pays corporate taxes? Isn't it consumers?
Consumers pay for everything at the end, right?
Sure.
When everybody pays for everything. It's all together. That's what makes an economic system. But the idea that they should not pay them at all and get a free ride, in some ways, all it does is give them an advantage over somebody else. I mean, I'm all for the lowest. Everybody who listens to this show has to know that nobody dislikes paying taxes more than me. All I know is, and you know what, I'll argue with anybody about this, anytime somebody else weasels away to not pay me and the people I care about, my friends, the listeners, have to pay more. And you can argue that you're blue in the face, but I'm telling you I'm right on that one. So if they don't pay, I'm paying more. Maybe it's selfish. Just saying. everybody knows that I believe that the corporate tax should not be a double tax. I think the corporate rate should be the same as everybody else. And if the minute you pay a dividend, you should get a credit so that if you charge the person who gets the dividend, you end up breaking even. So I think everybody should end up wherever the number is. If it's 30%, 32%, I mean, it's not over my pay grade to pick the number. But wherever it is, everybody should pay. So there shouldn't be an advantage in being a corporation versus an individual versus an LLC. It should get you to the same place. Because if everybody pays the same amount, I mean, wherever you're, I'm not saying it shouldn't be progressive a little bit, but I think everybody should pay the same amount, and that way it's not a national sport to pay nothing when other people are paying more than they have to. Is that fair, David?
I agree. I've always said, you know, all these guys, Schultz and Buffett and all that, oh, we pay too little and our secretaries pay a higher percentage and higher dollar amount. Take your checkbook out and write a check to the U.S. Treasury. Real simple.
Well, the idea that those people were able to hide their stuff overseas, and we have people in our government that we pay, where you've got 1,000 Starbucks in the city of London, and Starbucks looks you right in the face and says, we're not making any money in London, we're making it all in Amsterdam. And you go, wait a minute, you got two Starbucks in Amsterdam. I'm not that stupid. I mean, I hope I never get that stupid.
Google, you know they only operate out of Ireland.
Yeah, they're only out of Ireland. I mean, come on. And then it makes it worse. The companies over there use that money to take over other companies. So if you actually stayed here, paid your 30% or whatever it was at the time, 35%, you're at a massive disadvantage. I don't think it's got to be my 11th commandment. You should never be at a disadvantage by doing the right thing.
I agree. That's a wonderful saying.
And yet, if you look at the way our laws are here, dramatically that doing the right thing puts you at a disadvantage in a lot of. Am I on my horse here a little bit or what?
I 100% agree with you. I like the statement.
I agree that too.
And yet we see it here, and it's unfortunate. But no. By the way, we have to talk about maybe tomorrow a little bit. Who's it to send us the one about the tax on the south side? Is it?
I think Tomo emailed
Tomo. What a great article, and I thank him for that. You know, by the way, a lot of what I've learned over the years we've been on the show, Maddie too, have been what people send it. Just because we don't talk about it all the time doesn't mean I don't read it. I mean, it's some pretty interesting stuff in there. Anyway, S&P futures now, we'll come back a little bit. We're only down 875. We were up earlier. NASDAQ futures down 26. David, thank you. Biogen, again, is a big story this morning, down $86. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.